Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Puyatmann und da!
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. It's been a busy weekend of football we had and some interesting results in the DFB Pokal as well. Plenty to get through for this week's edition. Of course, match day 16 has been and gone. And yeah, goals are plenty, 31 in total. And the magic number seemed to be 3. 6 of the 7 teams that found victory on match day 16 scored 3 goals. Hamburg, of course, being the exception. We'll touch on them in a moment. Once again, my wonderful teammate, partner in crime, very, very much on equal footing, Eva Lotte-Bolle. Eva, pleasure as always. How you doing?
I'm very well this morning. Thank you, Matthew. I had a lot of fun with most of the matches of that match day. And happy to talk about them.
We will get on to match day 16 in just a moment, but we're going to indulge a little bit on probably it may be the game of the year, maybe to us probably. And that was the Pokal game between Holstein Kiel and Bayern Munich, which obviously went to penalties. Ioannis Gelios making a crucial save and then Finn Bartels scoring the winner. Eva, we both have different takes on what we saw. I was at work in the lunchroom watching on my mobile phone, trying not to yell at the top of my voice. It was an unbelievable contest. The fact that they took Bayern all the way to penalties and then eventually won. But there is almost this great shame that they couldn't do it in front of a packed stadium. And that's almost kind of like the downer of the whole thing.
Yeah, first of all, I was very, very impressed by Kiel's performance. I really liked how they played throughout the game. I mean, of course, Bayern failed to score 3-1. Yeah. But in general, I thought that their performance was just very well. And as well as Kiel just never stopped believing in themselves. I mean, you could see that with just a late equalizer. I wasn't in the room anymore when they scored. I actually had to go to the toilet and my parents were in the living room and just started to scream and I ran back. And it has something to do with how Bayern is performing in general at the moment, but also put spark into that whole myth of the DFB Pokal being special and letting small clubs believe in themselves. I mean, you could say that Kiel is more of a handball city than it is a football city. You have Thierry Kiel, who is performing very, very well in German handball, but internationally as well. So I think they had Holstein Kiel in the sky, or Holstein or something like that, with club colors red, white and blue before the game. And you could just really see that although fans weren't there, the team just really wanted to get a win for the fans, for the city, and they did that very well. I mean, it was a very good game, in my opinion, throughout. I mean, even the penalty shootout, we spoke about that before we started to record this. I mean, I haven't seen so many good penalties just from both sides in a very long time in the DFB Pokal, I think. I mean, you have seen lower clubs winning in this DFB Pokal season as well, but also in the last couple of years, but I can't really remember that a penalty shootout was that high in quality. And I think that's just a tiny bit more important for Kiel as well. I mean, you really have to point out Yannis Gelios. He was brilliant throughout the game. It's not really easy defending against the Bayern team, who is not at their best stage, but is still very, very good in scoring goals. And yeah, really, really was. I wasn't surprised. You can say, can't really say that, because we have seen Gelios throughout the season. But I really liked his performance. And I mean, that just the way Finn Bartels is scoring that last penalty. Yeah, it just fits to the story. And I think they definitely deserve it. And I mean, I think it's the first time for a very long time that Bayern went out after the second round. And I think that's already in the second round. And that's something Kiel did very well. And yeah. Really appreciated what they did for Zweite Bundesliga football as well.
100%. I do recall, I think it was Magdeburg in 2001 that knocked Bayern out. And of course, a very good year for the Pokal. But yeah, I think it's in, and we'll keep, I'll try and keep this short before, and we should get onto the actual league action. But the Pokal really needed this, like, really badly. You know, there is a magic of cup competitions, and we're constantly told that there's this magic, but when you see the same sorts of teams winning it without sort of any variance or a magic cup run that leads to the final, it's really hard to kind of believe it. So as much as I think it was meant to be Darmstadt that was supposedly ready to coronate Bayern, they get to play Kiel. But it was awesome. It was so good. A really, really enjoyable cup tie. And it probably showed in their performance against Karlsruhe, which we should start now with the league. You know, they were the heavy legs were very much a factor in this game. They did lose to Karlsruhe 3-2. And that's not taking anything away from what Karlsruhe did. They were very, very good in this game. Philipp Häser, Marco Tita, Robert Bournemouth, the scorers, all of them, three of the four players in the back four getting the goals for Karlsruhe. Kiel really got into action in the second half when Lee Jae-sung and Nicholas Hauptmann were subbed on. Yanni Serra getting the two goals in that game, of course. He will be going to Arminia Bielefeld on a free at the end of the season. Eva, you know, Kiel had plenty of the ball. We know that they were going to control the tempo of the game, but Karlsruhe came in with a very good plan. They scored early. They scored in critical moments in the game. And, you know, they were, for mine, they were worthy of the 3 points.
Yeah, definitely. I thought what was really helping that Kiel, still they were tired, but still had 66% of the ball. And that really helped Karlsruhe, because they didn't have to really push the game forward. And, I mean, Kiel was just tired after 120 minutes, and Karlsruhe used that very well. And I mean, this is not the first time Karlsruhe scores that late winner. It's really quality of them, and I think it's something they developed throughout this season, and that's really helping them, because last season that were the games they lost instead of winning, and they found very good ways to not let Kiel's front row being involved in any kind of action before the goal. And I thought they did that very well. I mean, for Häuser, it's his first goal since September 2018, when he played for Dresden still. And I mean, Karlsruhe had plenty of chances. I think Hoffmann could have made it 2-0 before Tita scored as well. Gersbeck was also very good in goal. You have to, if we speak about goalkeepers, he was very good as well. I had to laugh a bit, because Kiel fans put that banner up of we are the world's number one, and Karlsruhe then scoring that late winner in front of that sign was a bit ironic in some ways. But yeah, I thought that when you looked at that game, too much was being put on that Kiel was tired, but not that much. Like, some people were saying, Well, even Karlsruhe wins against them now. I mean, Karlsruhe is not a bad team this season, and you really have to point that out. I think they, Christian Eichner really formed a good team there, and you could see that with even without Hoffmann scoring, they have enough players that have that quality, and I really like that. But just one last funny thing. I always look at heat maps for analyzing, and the heat map for Karlsruhe, if you want, I can tweet it after this episode is released. The midfield is completely empty. Like, there's basically not, it didn't happen enough there to create heat there. And most of it is actually from the left side, but then there's just like empty space between the top players and the defense, and it's look or the offense and the defense. It looks a bit ridiculous. It looks a bit like a child wanted to draw out some round forms or something like that, and this is how he ended up with. So yeah, still don't want to talk down Kaiser performance, because I thought they were doing very well in this performance, in this game. Sorry.
The heat map is a work of art, and you love to see it. But they were good. I was very impressed with them, and the fact that, you know, they didn't rely on the usual suspects to get their goals, always a positive sign. And you know, they're in good shape to not be in the situation they were this time last season. Let's move on to probably the biggest result of the match day in terms of a team being so desperately in need of a victory. We've spoken about this team for so very, very long. When were they going to win? If you guessed St. Pauli before I even finished the sentence, you are correct. They did win a game. It has been a long time coming. Match day 2, when they beat Heidenheim, was the only other time they've won this season. But they did do it a little bit harder than it maybe needed to be. They started fantastically in this game. Guido Burgstaller assisting Rodrigo Zalazar, and then Zalazar returning the favour, and Guido Burgstaller getting his first goal since, I think, Drock Tarson and Assel in the cup for Schalke. He scored a brace in that game. That was a year and a half ago. Then Genki Haraguchi for Hanover said, "I am putting my team on my back. I'm going to do it myself." He scored twice in 2 minutes to make it 2-2. Hanover had some chances to make it 3-2, but failed to score. And then once they went down to 10 men, St. Pauli took over, and it would be 17-year-old Igor Matonovic scoring the winning goal for St. Pauli. And Eva, we know how important that win was, with teams around them getting at least a point. Massive confidence boost for this team, and getting, you know, one of the old guards they've brought in, an experienced player in Burgstaller, and someone they're very high on in Matonovic, not only to score a goal, but to score the winner. It's a massive a moral boost for them.
Yeah, and I really have to say that, especially in the first half, I really liked St. Pauli's performance. And this time, if you compare it to the Kiel game, they managed to score a second time. And also, I think, very good for Zalazar. I mean, he scored those penalties, and then he was kind of, losing his confidence scoring again, so that can really help. Of course, similar to Burgstaller, I mean, he has one assist and one goal from that game after, as you've mentioned, not scoring since August 2019. And the thing that then, when I say that they did well in the first half, the second half was, I mean, of course, it's very difficult if your opponent starts off very well with those two goals. But, I mean, that game could have ended differently, especially in my opinion, because Hannover could have had a penalty. I mean, I read some explanation about that from Colinas Erben, which is a referee podcast, Twitter page, whatever. It could have ended endedly. Don't really know if St. Pauli would have recovered from that if Hannover would have scored. But in the end, really important for them, as you've mentioned, huge confidence boost. I mean, it's their first win after 13 games. The last game they won was against Heidenheim. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yep.
But yeah, the defending looked a bit sloppy, especially I think for the second Haraguchi goal. I mean, this was Haraguchi's first header that went that went on to being a goal. Shows a bit how you should not defend a goal when some of you never scored by hat before managed this. But on the other hand, for Nova, I mean, they keep talking about wanting to be a team to push for promotion, but they already have 7 defeats. Just to compare that to last season, I mean, fun fact, every top team has already more defeats than Armenia had in the total of the 2019-2020 season. And then you can see, of course, wins are important, but not losing games is more important. And this is something we've seen from HSV last season, giving up goals last minute. And if you're only, like, I mean, this was Haraguchi in that game, and he was basically the only one I really saw that he wanted to get points off that game. We said that before, someone like Dukes is only that good as the rest of the team is, and if the rest of the team is relying on Genki Haraguchi, I'm not sure that really helps. So I thought in the end that St. Pauli deserved that win. Yeah, just from the first half, but also that they never gave up in the second half as well.
Yeah, Hanover's first half performance, yeah, they stunk. They were just awful. There comes a time where you really got to think legitimately about where you're at. You know, they went all in. They were very confident that, okay, we're going to get back up. Things are going to happen. You know, we trust Kokach. No problem. All good. They made some good signings. Everything looked optimistic for the way it is, and it's just not happening. I'm surprised in some regards, you know, that Kind and the brass up the top aren't thinking about the next move. Not saying that Kokach is on thin ice, but, you know, they are expecting way more than this. This is not where they thought they were going to be. And to lose to a team that hadn't won since match day 2 and to do it in the way they did it, that's concerning. You know, there's talk that they're interested in Serdar Dusan from Darmstadt. He's not going to fix their problems. Their problems are defensively, they're just not consistent. The midfield is really one or two players, and Haraguchi is one of them. Vidant hasn't been able to hit his straps, and Dukes is very streaky. He's either on or he's off. And yeah, it's just not working. So we'll see what they do. But, you know, as a bad loss it was for Hanover, St. Pauli desperately needed that win, and a good win for them. Let's move on then to our final Group 1 game, and it takes us to the Ruhrstadion as Bochum continue their winning ways. They beat Nürnberg 3-1, and it wasn't the usual suspects. Well, to score, I guess Robert Juhl continuing his fantastic form. He's got 8 goals this season, but it was Robert Tescher, who is not a known goal scorer. He scored twice in this game. His first goal was absolute class. They did have to come from behind, however. Manuel Schaefer did open the scoring on 29 minutes, and it kind of summed up his game, because Schaefer had a ton of really good chances in this game and was unable to capitalize. And when Bochum took the ascendancy in this game, they were too good.
Yeah, although I had the feeling that, I mean, and we've seen this from Bochum a couple of times now, especially in 2021, that they need a wake-up call. And that was the Nuremberg goal that was back when they played Darmstadt. Darmstadt had to score first. I mean, this was much more earlier than the last game, but still, you had a feeling that both teams woke up after Schaefer scored their goal, and then the game in general got a bit better. I mean, before that, there was not a lot happening in those first 30 minutes. I did think, I don't know how you see this, but I think there was this Singh foul by Nuremberg on one of the Bochum players. If you compare it to the red cards in another game we will talk about later, he doesn't even get a card for that. In my opinion, you can give at least yellow, if not even a red card for that foul. Well, would have changed not a lot for Bochum, I think, but yeah, maybe for Nuremberg. Yeah, and Nuremberg really, and I think we've talked about this a bit already. If they create chances to score another goal to actually take the lead again or whatever, but I mean, Scheffler, you spoke about that. Scheffler had that chance. Or a couple of chances actually, and but if you only create three shots on target from 12 shots on goal, I mean, sure, you really deserve to win this. I mean, no offense to Bochum, but they use their chances way better. And I mean, Tesche isn't really the one, you know, that he's a huge goal scorer from the last couple of years. I mean, he was. I don't want to say he was fallen out in as a fan favorite. He was never really a fan favorite, but nobody you could easily forget him that he was still playing, and now he's coming back into the team because in general you see that for Bochum it's working very very well in general. And well, I mean, on the other side, Bochum scored 11 goals from set pieces this season. I think it's they're the top team from goals from set pieces, and it's something you really have, you know, before, and then you have to defend it better, and Nuremberg didn't. So yeah, I thought it was a very deserved win for Bochum, although XG says that Nuremberg was. Had higher chances to score, which of course was the Scheffler chance. But yeah, I think in general too much came from the right side, which Bochum had under control at some stage, and then you could really, yeah, pinpoint that on that side, and nothing really came from the left side. You could see that on the heat map, and yeah, Bochum used their chances very efficiently, and that's why they. Well, the deserved winners, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it makes the title race very, very interesting. Two of the teams in that hunt are in our next section of games. So we are going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to look at Heidenheim's game with Darmstadt. We start our Group 2 games with Heidenheim and Darmstadt. Darmstadt desperately needing to get back to winning ways, and Heidenheim just continuing to keep on plugging. And Heidenheim did the business in this game, 3-0, and despite not much happening in the first half, they turned it on in the second. Christian Kulwetter getting to double figures. He's got 10 goals this season now. Patrick Mainka and then Dennis Tomala rounding out the scoring. The key catalyst for the goals in this one, Eva, was set piece defending. It was something that Darmstadt didn't do particularly well, and the first two goals were a testament to that.
Yeah, which is kind of surprising because actually it's the other way around that Darmstadt is kind of good from scoring goals from set pieces, or at least yeah, not really goals from open play, you could say. So kind of Heidenheim, if you, when you say it's a German saying, they kind of beat them with their own weapons. So there's a German saying. But yeah, from the beginning on, I thought that Darmstadt was a bit better. I thought they had a better start without creating enough danger to really put pressure on Heidenheim. And Heidenheim at that chance, I think it was Kulwetter before halftime. And then they kind of took that chance into the second half and started that off very well. It didn't give Darmstadt enough room until like last minute. I think there was a hit on the post or something like that from Darmstadt. But until then, yeah, I thought Heidenheim did that very well. I thought that Patrick Mainka was involved in two goals, and never before was he involved in two goals. But I just thought that Heidenheim won that game mainly because they went out of the changing rooms and a bit more fresh, and then they kind of did what Darmstadt failed to do compared to how they started into that second half. Of course, an early goal is always good to do that, and then they, as I said, did not leave a lot of room for Darmstadt to score. Christian Clemens, who joined Darmstadt from FC Köln, couldn't really... Well, I mean, I think it was his first game, but he might be an interesting signing going forward. But it's going to be interesting to see how long Darmstadt officials will look at that and actually keep on going with Markus Anfang, because if you look why they kind of fired Gramotzes in the first place or didn't want to extend his contract for more than a year, you kind of look for those really, intel he brings into that team, and you can't really find it, at least in my opinion, where I cannot find it, what he's really done to that team to make it better. And think some Darmstadt fans will look at that a bit surprised or very unhappy, because I do think that with Kramatzes, they would have had a better shot top places.
Yeah, and it's becoming evident that they can't defend very well. They've now lost three games in a row. Only 4 points above the relegation playoff spot. And, it's just unbelievable. It seems it's not their ability to score goals. They've been able to showcase that this year. They got 27 goals. They cannot defend for the life of them. They, equal fourth worst defensive record. They've conceded as many goals as St. Pauli. And, they're just really bad. The bread and butter they can't do. And, when you make a drastic shift to the way a team plays, like they've done from Gramotzes to Anfang, it's become pretty clear that this group of players cannot consistently produce at the level expected. And that is why, with a game to go before we mark halfway through the season, that there really is a deep concern with whether Darmstadt has what it takes, even if they're bringing in players like Christian Clemens, who hadn't played a Bundesliga game since 2019-20 season. He played 20 games for Köln in their Zweite Bundesliga campaign. He's been playing fourth division football this year. So, they may be diamond in the rough type signings, but it might not matter. So it is an interesting watch this space with Darmstadt. They are clearly in trouble. They really need to win this weekend, and it won't be an easy task. Let's move on to last night's game. And it would be a fair... Well, last night, if you're listening on the Tuesday, the Monday night kickoff, if you're not. This game, I felt, was going to be a little bit closer than it was. And it wasn't until I'd got to work and Eva had said, "What is going on?" did I realise that Hamburg were 5-0 up against a pretty good Osnabrück side. In fact, Osnabrück were one of the best away sides this season. And they just got absolutely smashed by a Hamburg side that really wanted to do it for Daniel Thune against his former employers, and it was ruthless. Sonny Kittel, a brace for Bakary Yatta, Joshua Wagnermann scoring a nice goal, and then Maurice Trapp, who'd done really well on Simon Terodde prior, he conceded an own goal. And there's not a lot you can take out of Osnabrück's performance, but what it does mean is Hamburg remain top of the table. And this was a statement win against a pretty good side. You want to send a message to the teams below that, this is a different animal to previous years. That's how you do it.
Yeah, so I watched that game, obviously, Monday night. And I was talking to a friend of mine who is an Hamburg fan before, and she says, I think it's going to be a tough game, a very tight game, but we're going to lose in the end. And after the 4-0, I was like, you're still sure about that? But it was not only after they scored the fourth goal, but already from the first minute on. I thought Hamburg started off very well, very dominant display. I think their midfield throughout the game, not only the first half, but throughout the game, did a really good job keeping Osnabrück away. I mean, you can't do that over 90 minutes, but I thought 90% of the time, midfield was really good in defending, had something to do with that. Osnabrück's pressing wasn't that good, in my opinion. They, like, towards the end, it got better a bit, but they, if one player started to press a bit, and which was mostly Christian Santos, and then the rest of it just basically didn't follow. Of course, it's difficult if it's after 60 minutes, you're already 1-0 down and you know of the quality, but then they kind of had around 20 minutes to develop their way of playing as well. And I mean, you mentioned it. They aren't that bad away, but of course, on the other side, you have to look that this was their fourth defeat in five games, so they're not coming off a place where they have a lot of self-confidence going to that game against Hamburg. And I think you saw that a bit. I mean, really, the only player you had the feeling was trying to score a goal, or at least trying to go for it, was Christian Santos. I mean, he had that goal disallowed due to handball. I'm still not sure about that because I only saw like two or three camera angles that don't really show that very well, like just from far away. And in the highlights I watched, they don't show them at all. And that would have, I mean, then it would have, I think it was shortly before the 4-1, for the 4-1, sorry, before the 2-0 by Yatta, and maybe the team would have got the game. I have to learn how to talk again. The game would have taken a different kind of spin, but that's a lot of maybe and would have and could have. Still, wasn't really impressed by Osnabrück's performance. I mean, that started to the second half was oh well, harsh for them as well, but their defending was horrible. I think Yatta, who isn't really famous for scoring headers as well, can score that header kinda without being watched in any way. And you could see that, you had the feeling that, especially in the, you could see that with the Kittel goal, with the first Yatta goal as well, that the way Osnabrück wanted to defend, it just didn't work because the players were way off from the people they wanted to, or were ordered to defend against, and that didn't work very well. I mean, and then if you have five shots on target and they're all going in, Hamburg didn't need to do a lot more. And yeah, I think it was the display they needed, and they needed to send that message. And also good for the team spirit that none of the goals were scored by Terodde, because Hamburg is a bit reduced to that, to Terodde. I mean, he has scored half of the goals, but in a game like that, I think it was really important that the goals came from other players.
100%. It is one thing to have a player who is just unbelievably fantastic and just playing on a completely different chessboard. And then, it's important for the likes of Yata, who we know is very talented and hasn't shown it as much this season, still coming to grips. Kittel hasn't been particularly great. And the criticisms of Wagnermann, for example, defensively have become understandable. One thing we'll note, he's very athletic, but he scored a great goal on the he scored a great goal against Osnabrück, and Yata was fantastic. Like they all, it's very important because it's so easy to have one player just score all the goals and it's all great and we shroud them with praise. But then if you look at deeper, you can see, well, here's problems if they do go up. who else is going to step up because they couldn't do it in the Zweite Bundesliga. This is important. This is very, very important in it, and it will show that in games against the top sides, if they can find other goal scorers, if Terodde is marked out of the game like he was here, then yeah, they'll have what they haven't had for quite a long time, and that's depth. Good depth. So we will see how Hamburg goes. It was just not a good day for Osnabrück. On to the next one for them. Let's talk about Dusseldorf, who continue their fine, fine form. 5 wins in their last six now. They win 3-0 at Erzgebirge Aue. The snow was gorgeous. It was a picturesque day in Saxony. And Dusseldorf said, we'll take the 3 points back home. David Kordnowski, Kenan Karaman, and Thomas Pleitel, the goal scorers. It's Karaman's fifth, Pleitel's first, Kovnacki's third. And yeah, they are making a rise. Dusseldorf now into third place, and they are separate. They have put themselves in a very, very good position. One of the four teams in the league. And Eva, this make not only does it make your prediction a little bit closer to the way you would have hoped, but they're actually the one thing they've done during this winning streak is that they are scoring freely and they're finding multiple different ways to find the back of the net.
Yeah, and I have to say I didn't expect them to turn it around like that. I'm really impressed how that team developed throughout this season, throughout this first half of the season. And I mean, we talk about that always when we talk about Aue at home. They're normally not an easy team to beat at home, but it looks a bit like I think Robert pointed it out last week that the Aue is finding back to the not very good away form from last season, but they shouldn't copy that to their home form as well. And then we're not good in this game. This is not just like Fortuna was lucky three times, Aue had a lot of chances. Nope. I think they missed two chances, but they never really found X's in that game, in my opinion. And yeah, for Fortuna, they're at a high right now, which they use very well and which they have to use because you see how the teams besides them are all picking up points as well. I mean, Bochum won, HSV won, Kiel is a bit struggling, so they really use that, and that's very crucial for them if they want to play in the role for promotion. And that performance definitely, as we said, the HSV win was, the Bochum win was, this was definitely sending a message to their opponents as well. And yeah, I thought they did very well. And yeah, for our just very horrible defending as well. So yeah, Uwe found a way to, yeah, I mean, he now had enough time probably to take Fortuna down that road he wants them to go. And yeah, we will, yeah, happy to see how this all will develop in that second half of the season.
Absolutely, and it does. We do get into a situation where we see a manager struggle, and we immediately whip the pitchforks out and decide that his time is up. But Dusseldorf stuck with Rösler, and credit to him, he's done an unbelievably good job of turning it around, and they are now in a position. They've got two very difficult games before coming up. They've got Greuther Fürth, and then they play Hamburg in midweek. They are a good chance of being in the top two at the end of those two games. Fürth's beatable. They've shown a little bit of weakness recently in Hamburg, a good quality side, and I think a good match should be instead when those two sides meet. So it will be very interesting. We did see a debut for Felix Klaus, who joined from Wolfsburg, and Ruven Hennings celebrated his 150th game for Fortuna. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll look at our last three games, which are going to be Greuther Fürth and Paderborn, Regensburg, Sandhausen, and Würzburg and Braunschweig. We will start with Fürth and Paderborn. Greuther Fürth were hoping to get back to winning ways after the defeat last weekend, but they weren't able to do so. Even though they took the lead after 8 minutes through Sebastian Ernst, they gave up another defensive howler, this time Christian Furyk, getting on the score sheet. And Paderborn were able to hold steadfast and get a draw from this one. Eva, it would be fair to say that Fürth had the better chances. Their XG very much suggests that they had some unbelievably good chances, but the goalkeeping of Leopold Zingerle and some pretty bad inaccuracy in front of goal was pretty much the only difference that kept Fürth from winning this game.
Yeah, and I think the main problem with Fürth is that they create a lot of shots on goal. I mean, they had 23 shots on goal in this game, and I think it was the game against St. Pauli where they had the same amount of number, but they do not score that much, and they hit the post twice in that game. I think it was Zirguin shot and Nielsen with a header shortly before and after the break, if I'm correct. And of course, those are very unlucky things to happen, but in general, if you look at the game, if you just look at the highlights, you would suggest that Fürth should have won that game. And yeah, I would agree with that. I thought that Fürth looked more dangerous throughout the game. Paderborn didn't offer enough. I mean, they had the last chance with Ingelsson, but Burchard just, yeah, made a very good save with that. And generally, you've mentioned it, good goalkeeping in that game. I don't really know what to make out of that game for both sides. I mean, Paderborn is lacking some kind of, really finding the back of the net in front. Of course, Fury scored here, but there were a couple of games where they could have won but just failed to score. I mean, they will probably use Vasiliadis to Bielefeld. They wanted to sell him at the beginning of the season, but Bielefeld said that the price was too high, and now he's not playing a role at all for Paderborn, at least not that I can remember. And now they have to let him go for free. Not really clever managing, in my opinion, but okay, I'm not a manager of a football club, so who knows. You said the XG is way higher for Fürth, and that's kind of the last nail in the coffin where I would say that Fürth should have won that game.
Absolutely. A team that also, or two teams that really needed to accumulate points were Jan Regensburg and Sandhausen. Sandhausen were hoping to go back-to-back. Regensburg, well, they've waited a while since a win, match day 9, the last time they did so. They were able to get back on the winning ways with a 3-1 win. Daniel Cates-Ruel scored the opening goal for Sandhausen. And then, you know, Regensburg really turned it on with an impressive second half showing. A brace for Jan George and Sebastian Stolzer, enough to give the Jan all 3 points. It was a worthy result for them. They didn't start the game particularly well. They were worthy of going behind, but a fantastic second half performance from Regensburg, enough to give them the 3 points.
Yeah, I thought that Sandhausen had the better start to that game. Obviously, they scored first, but really failed to continue that run. The feeling they just wanted to copy what they did against Heidenheim, but Jan had the answer to that in the second half. I think Sandhausen really finished the score the second time. Maybe the game would have ended differently then, but Kallis Kana with very, very good footwork before the equalizer. And for Jan George, I think it's the first brace since well, couple of months or 2.5 years or something like that. It has been a while. Yeah, 2.5 years. And also, fun fact, I just recognized that while I was watching the highlights, Jan Regensburg has the theme song of Hawaii Five-O as their goal jingle. I was not expecting that, I have to say. But yeah, it was Regensburg's first win after 5 games without one. Those are the first points in 2021 for them. And yeah, I think they outplayed Sandhausen very well, especially in the second half. Finished it off very early. You had the feeling in the second half Regensburg was close to scoring the fourth goal, then Sandhausen to score, yeah, getting one back. So massive win, as you've mentioned, for Regensburg. A bit worrying for Sandhausen, especially if you look at teams from the from the bottom places are starting to picking up points as well.
Yeah, it was vital. It also meant that they got to leapfrog Darmstadt into 13th, and now they're 2 whole games clear of that scrap for the relegation playoff spot. And that leads us to our last game of match day 16, Würzburger Kickers and Eintracht Braunschweig. This game got nasty. Two players sent off at Braunschweig, and even despite that, Würzburg were unable to break the deadlock, and they basically hit every part of the frame of the goal. Some wonderful goalkeeping by Yasmin Fezic, and still, Braunschweig leaving the Flyer Alarm Arena almost with a moral victory, despite the score being nil-nil. Eva, there's not a lot you can really say about this, but what a blown opportunity for Würzburg.
Yeah, well, first of all, the positive things for Würzburg. I mean, they now picked up more points, 5 in those last 3 games than they did in the complete first half of the season in 2020. Yay. But yeah, definitely this is a game you have to win, especially if it goes against an opponent that yeah, can be one to push down to one of the relegation spots if you want to stay in the league. And I mean, you have to point out that it was not only Würzburg using their chance as well, but also Fezic, who was very, very good on goal. There was some talk about him throughout the season, but in that game I really liked him. Also the rest of the Braunschweig defense did a good job in that kind, in that way that they try to secure in the end. And well, if you're down to 9 men, there's no way keeping your opponents out of your box for 90 minutes. But of course, they I thought that the rest of the game they handled kind of well. Of course, there was not much to be done from them offensive wise, but offense wise, but yeah, the they did what they had to do. Würzburg would have done, or should have done more. Just one player I want to point out here for Würzburg is Rolf Fälscher. I think he is one player to look out for. I think he comes from the MLS and is already a vital factor in that Würzburg team, I would say. And yeah, for Würzburg, not a really happy result. For Braunschweig, they will be happy they picked up points here.
Absolutely, Fälscher from LA Galaxy in Major League Soccer, as Aoife mentioned. And yeah, there's not a lot you can really, I mean, say. You take the positives, they didn't lose, but they had 2 men advantage, and that's just, yeah, they missed an opportunity. They missed the boat, especially with St. Pauli winning. They could have made that sort of three te four teams in this in the region of 2 points. So yeah, big missed opportunity when they had the chance to win with the numerical advantage. That's it for this week's edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. Before we go, on the Monday was Martin Luther King Day, and I wanted to leave with a quote. something that resonated with me, and I know that there are a lot of people still going through the lockdowns and the unfortunate situation of COVID. So I'd like to leave you with this. If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward. You guys have a great weekend. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. Goodbye.